and Campfire Relief.
And welcome. Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Ohm Foods, serving organic, non-GMO whole foods, including wild-caught mahi-mahi, and having the largest vegan menu in downtown Chico. Ohm Foods serves homemade teas and lemonade, acai bowls, and smoothies blended with coconut water, and you can find them at 142 Broadway, just two blocks from Chico State. They're open Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. and on Saturday from 11 to 3 with to-go and catering available. For more info, find them at I Love Ohm Foods and, of course, on Facebook. And we're also made possible by Peterson Tree Care because trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's amazing natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available, Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached by calling 518-0924. This is KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to show 1934, the August 21st, 2019 episode of Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal news, animal rights, and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and streaming online at kzfr.org. With me is co-host Danny Toms. What do we have coming up, Danny?
On today's show, we'll have a CNN opinion piece on how humans are literally consuming the planet, followed by a sad story on the deaths of captive stingrays at a highly acclaimed Chicago aquarium, followed by plans to build an epic wildlife corridor over U.S. Highway 101 in Southern California. And optionally, our last piece of news will be an audio clip from Emily Barwick, also known as the Bite Size Vegan, on our individual legacy, if we have time. And we'll end, as always, with the Chico Vegan calendar of events. Jeannie, take it away.
Thanks, Danny. I thought we'd open with a CNN opinion piece from August 8th, 2019, by researcher and writer Mark Linus. And it's titled, The Planet is Being Consumed by Humans. We've covered this topic quite a bit, but I think that this was very compellingly written. So let's have at it. Humanity is on a collision course with nature. Already, 72% of the global ice-free land surface is dedicated to supporting our species. And a third of the entire net primary production of the planet is consumed by humans. Net primary production is a measure of the combined photosynthetic output of all the world's plants. Because we grab so much for ourselves, smaller and smaller amounts are left in the food chain for the rest of life on Earth. No wonder so many other species are going extinct, displaced to the margins of existence in disappearing forests and degraded ecosystems. According to the latest International Union for Conservation of Nature's IUCN Red List, 40% of amphibians, 25% of mammals, 14% of birds, and 33% of corals are threatened with extinction. And that is only expected to get worse. Within another 30 years, the global human population will exceed 9 billion people, meaning we will have to increase food production by at least another 70% in order to stave off mass famine. Superimposed on all of this is the climate crisis, which will expand deserts, shift rainfall patterns beyond recognition, and make large areas of the world's current continental breadbaskets too hot or too dry to grow crops. These challenges are outlined in the latest special report of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, this time focusing on the issue of land use. The implications are profound. Just as the climate crisis demands that we transform our energy use, abandoning fossil fuels and switching to clean energy sources worldwide, addressing the challenge of land use requires dramatic changes in how we grow and consume food. The two crises are also intimately linked. The scientists make clear that without addressing land, it will be impossible to fully tackle global heating because 22% of greenhouse gas emissions arise from agriculture, forestry, and other land use. Although the IPCC experts are cautious in their use of language and do not make specific recommendations, it is clear from the report that a massive priority is to shift diets in developed countries away from the current heavy use of meat and dairy products. The majority of the world's land use is used not to feed humans directly, but to support livestock. This is something we've talked about many times on this show. Overconsumption of meat is unhealthy and also an environmental disaster. Rainforests are cleared in Brazil both to provide pasture for beef cattle, but also to grow soya crops for export to markets like Europe, where they are mostly used in animal feed. Ruminants like sheep and cattle do not only degrade land directly through overgrazing and pollution from their manure, they also release enormous quantities of methane, a global warming gas 30 times as powerful as carbon dioxide. For Western consumers, giving up steak and lamb is arguably the single most important personal contribution to tackling both the climate and biodiversity crises. A largely vegetarian, or better still, vegan, I didn't write that, he did, planet would be able to dramatically reduce agriculture, sparing more land for nature. However, the farming lobbies are powerful. In Europe, farmers are supported by subsidies, without which much livestock production would already be uneconomic. Europeans pay through taxes to support unnecessary land destruction by agriculture, hardly a sensible policy. Ditto for the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
In Brazil, the situation is even worse. Powerful agribusiness interests supported the election of President Bolsonaro, who The Economist dubbed as arguably the world's most environmentally dangerous head of state. And that is saying a lot. Bolsonaro, who was elected on a campaign that promised to explore the economic potential of the Amazon, has presided over a dramatic upswing in rainforest destruction. Don't imagine, however, and this is why I selected this piece, don't imagine, however, that locally produced grass-fed beef is a better bet. Low-intensity agriculture uses very large areas of land to produce comparatively little food. For example, lamb production in the UK ecologically impoverishes virtually the entire uplands for the sake of a trivial contribution to Britain's food security. The best overall approach is to improve the efficiency with which we use land. That means weaning ourselves off of livestock products at the same time as improving productivity of farming overall, so that the expected 2050 population of over 9 billion humans can be supported without expanding farmland even further at the expense of the rainforests. Although many well-fed Westerners romanticize small-scale farming in developing countries and in rural counties, in reality, the conditions faced by subsistence farmers in Africa and South Asia are extremely harsh. More than 800 million people are still undernourished, many of whom are stuck in traditional farming systems, which can barely produce enough for them to survive.
You know, if only we subsidized our farmers and our food system so that we could send food to people that are starving, you know.
if only. These farmers need access to better technology, such as the mechanization, irrigation, and transport to markets. They also need better seeds, including so-called GMOs that can be resistant to pests, require less water, and be more resilient to the changing climate. This means that environmental groups must urgently cease their ill-conceived and destructive blanket opposition to genetic engineering. This is also, this guy's a very interesting writer. He at one point was very anti-GMO and even sabotaged GMO experiments. But he then learned more and changed his position. He's a very interesting writer, Mark Linus.
When you have to grow massive amounts of crops in sort of a monoculture, ideally in the future to actually feed people, not feed cows, you're going to have massive disease pressure. There's no great way to do it organically or sustainably without getting, you know, the right kinds of seeds, the right kinds of business going on. It's just small, akin to the grass-fed pasteurizing, the kind of this westernized privileged notion that we can all have backyard gardens or small local cooperatives. It works here in Chico because we're the breadbasket of the country. It doesn't work in Iowa. You couldn't grow nothing but corn. You couldn't feed people. So
Pretty much.
We have to go with science, I think, versus our feelings.
All right. Moving on. We also need to quickly end perverse subsidies that are encouraging the use of biofuels. A substantial part of the U.S. corn crop is turned into ethanol to be used for fuel for road transport. This is a shocking waste to burn food in cars, which also raises food prices globally and worsens malnutrition. Palm oil produced in Malaysia and Indonesia is even worse, leading to rampant deforestation that is destroying the last habitats of the orangutan. It is possible to trace a positive vision given what the science now says, but this will require dramatic lifestyle changes for us and an entirely different approach to producing food. In short, we must produce much more for a growing population while reducing human domination of the planet's land surface and allowing ravaged ecosystems to recover. To do that, we have to accustom ourselves to using fewer livestock products and to accepting new technologies. Your new lab-originated plant-based burger using genetically engineered ingredients may not feel as authentic and traditional as a grass-fed beef burger, but it is a much better option for the planet. If we can spare a few million square miles of land from the twin curses of overgrazing and the plow, we can even begin to rewild it, allowing ecosystems to rebuild themselves naturally and to sequester billions of tons of carbon in the process. All is not yet lost, but getting to a better future will mean letting go of some of our most cherished habits and myths. Are we ready to do this? The answer will be on the plate in front of you when you next sit down to eat. And that is why I promote veganism and why I say it's such an important, powerful choice. That daily dose of food on your plate affects so many systems greater than yourselves, and it's so easy to do. It's much easier than buying an electric car. It's much easier than fixing our broken recycling system or our broken composting system.
Indeed. You know, I was thinking, reading this, you know, the initial howls coming from the masses, it would be like, it's so hard to change. We can't possibly do that. I mean, this whole system that we're enmeshed in the Western way of life is only 60, 70, 80 years old. It only came about recently. We didn't eat like this. Even the livestock we raised 100 years ago wasn't raised like this.
No, we're raising babies for food. We're raising baby animals to be eaten while they're not even full
grown. People ate a lot more vegetables and potatoes and stuff back in the old days.
The good old days.
Good old days.
Thank you. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. If you want to follow more current events and animal rights-related news, I invite you to follow the Non-Human Radio Facebook page. Over to you, Danny.
All right. If you're planning to visit an aquarium, think twice about participating in so-called touch pool interactive exhibits. This report from the Chicago Tribune about the unexplained and underreported stingray deaths in the Shedd Aquarium's touch pool is a warning to all well-intentioned aquarium goers. More than 30 stingrays died at the Shedd Aquarium earlier this year, but officials have not figured out why, and have replaced the fish with catches from the Gulf of Mexico. What could go wrong doing the same thing over? Aquarium officials first observed odd behavior among the rays at the end of January during routine checks. The fish were monitored, but nothing unusual was found, they said in a blog post. 34 of the aquarium's 42 Kaunos stingrays died not long afterwards. The aquarium's animal health team consulted experts throughout the country, including the Association of Zoos and Aquariums that accredits the Shedd. They reviewed operations of the indoor tanks, conducted tests, and examined the environment and food. But aquarium officials could not reach any conclusions about what caused the deaths, they said in a blog post dated March 16th and published on the aquarium's website. By mid-March, the remaining 8 Kaunos rays had been stabilized under clinical care, the aquarium said. The rays that died were, quote, replaced with ones that were humanely and sustainably caught in the Gulf of Mexico near Tampa, Florida, where populations are abundant, according to the Shedd Aquarium. I do hope I'm never humanely and sustainably caught and moved to Chicago.
Yeah, we could just replace you very easily. We'll just go net another Danny Toms out of the sea.
Well, you know, all the times I don't show up to the show. You can get my replacement. while the deaths were posted on the Shedd Aquarium blog, no news media reported on the event. The aquarium did not issue a news release as it has done in other instances of aquarium deaths. Alex Lewis, president and co-founder of the animal rights group Fins and Flukes, said that the news of the rays' deaths was extremely alarming and a waste of life. A veterinarian for the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals was particularly critical of touch exhibits. Dr. Heather Rowley of PETA told the Tribune that few exhibits are deadlier than a touch tank. The animals can't escape the groping hands that pollute the water with bacteria, and a single malfunction can suffocate or poison dozens of animals in one go. PETA urges visitors to keep their hands and their children away from these cesspools of suffering. Steve Hindy, head of the group Showing Animals Respect and Kindness, which spells out shark, who has protested at the shed in the past, told the Tribune that we really shouldn't be surprised by this, adding that today's technology makes looking at animals online better than viewing them through glass.
This is just astounding to me. I have seen these touch exhibits, and purportedly it helps some kids learn better about the rays, but I just find it a horrendous exhibition and invasion of these very peaceful critters' lives.
It's gross. I mean, it's terrible to the animals, you know, plucked from the sea, dropped in a tank, touched by hordes. Does anyone out there want to be touched by hordes of dirty children fingers?
Right. I mean, if you were a scuba diver, would you want to be touched by, you know, some, you know, alien hand?
Right.
Not really.
Over and over again until, like, you all got mysteriously sick and died.
Yeah. So it's just sad. And, you know, just that they're so easily replaced.
Yeah.
It's just so inhumane. And I just,
the problem with a lot of these kinds of zoos is they seem kid friendly. They seem cute. You go there once or twice, you think it's all great, and you don't realize in between all the animals die and get replaced, because it's just, it teaches you the kind of the commodification of all this.
And these are wild-caught animals. Just the trauma involved with that, I can't even, I can't conscience that.
No.
I was Googling around. I did find out that rays are sport fished off the coast of California. It's a sport fishery. Supposedly, they are good for sport fishing and eaten by some populations, which is kind of sad. There's even a business out of San Diego that is a traveling tide pool exhibit, and they drive around California, mostly Southern California, but the Fremont Public Library recently hired them to drive up, and they have a touching tide pool with critters. Yeah. So it's unfortunate. That was an article in the Chicago Tribune by Alejandro Serrano, titled "More Than 30 Stingrays Died at the Shedd Aquarium Over the Winter and Officials Still Don't Know Why," from August 9th, 2019. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. Back to you, Danny.
All right. Though he lives in the wild, mountain lion P22 lives a solitary life in a too small habitat, and he has a hard time finding a mate, like many of us out there in this small town. Famous for traveling across two freeways and making Griffith Park in Los Angeles his home, the lonesome mountain lion has become a symbol of the shrinking genetic diversity of wild animals that remain all but trapped by sprawling developments or risk becoming roadkill. Hoping to fend off the extinction of mountain lions and other species that require room to roam, transportation officials and conservationists will build a mostly privately funded wildlife crossing over a major Southern California highway. It will give big cats, coyotes, deer, lizards, snakes, and other creatures a safe route to open space and better access to food and potential mates. This span along US 101 will only be the second animal overpass in a state where tunnels are more common. Officials say it will be the first of its kind near a major metropolis and the largest in the world, stretching 200 feet above 10 lanes of busy highway and a feeder road just 35 miles northwest of downtown LA in the Agora Hills. Scientists tracking mountain lions fitted with GPS collars found that roadways are trapping animals, logistically trapping animals, in the Santa Monica Mountains, which run along the Malibu coast and across the middle of Los Angeles to Griffith Park, where mountain lion P22 has settled. Experts say this reproductive isolation will result in genetic collapse for mountain lions. Habitat loss has driven mountain lion populations to inbreeding that could lead to extinction within 15 years unless the big cats regularly connect with other populations to increase their diversity, according to a study published this year by University of California, Los Angeles, UC Davis, and the National Park Service. The $87 million bridge, mostly privately funded, entered its final design phase last month and is on track for groundbreaking within 2 years and completion by 2023, according to the California Department of Transportation. 80% of the money to build it will come from private sources. More than $13.5 million in private funding has already been raised, but there's obviously much more needed to meet the 80% requirement. The remaining 20% will come from public funds already allocated towards conservation projects. Some 300,000 cars a day travel that stretch of US 101 in Agoura Hills, a small city where residents regularly spot tarantulas, coyotes, and bobcats in their yards. Drivers on the busy freeway in the Liberty Canyon area might do a double take as they speed under a bridge with brush and trees growing on top, seamlessly joining hillsides on both sides of the lanes. But from the perspective of the animals meandering to or from the Santa Monica Mountains, the topography will hopefully be indistinguishable from the scenery on either side, said architect Clark Stevens. His design will total about 8 acres of landscape, of which the bridge top occupies about an acre. The bridge has enjoyed nearly universal support, unusual for a public works project. The draft environmental impact report received nearly 9,000 comments, with only 15 opposed, according to NWF. So, yeah, it's not just the bridge, but they're designing it such probably to funnel the animals to it and make it look like a natural thing so that they... be slightly embarrassing to build this thing and nobody crosses it, I suppose.
The architect's rendering made it look just really green and beautiful, which we know that our hillsides are not always green and beautiful. That's a spring view of it.
Next, the hikers and the BMX bikers are going to be clamoring that they need to have trails over it.
Yeah, that is a possibility.
Oh, I know. Call me cynical, but...
Maybe some of the groups that will be funding it, but donating to it will be. Yeah,
no,
mountain
private
bikers.
Trails,
and,
yeah.
So, but I just think it's pretty great. There's a lot of bad news in the world, but it's nice to see that here in the United States we have this ambitious, amazing environmental project in such a hyper urban area as Los Angeles.
I mean, they got so many toll roads down there anyway. I'm just like, maybe put a toll to drive under this thing and pay for it that way.
It's hyper urban, but it's also got a lot of money, right? I mean, there's no doubt about it. LA County has a lot of wealthy people, so even though they need to raise a lot of money for it, I think that they'll have no problem having maybe some kind of competition, like to have that bridge named in your named after you or your company. I'll bet there's somebody out there who'll spend a few chunks of.
All they got to do is on the side of the overpass,
I'm sorry?
On the side of the overpass, brought to you by Marvel Studios.
Yeah, really. Yeah, and it's interesting. I just read a news piece. Audubon Canyon Ranch in Mendocino posted some news that a tracked mountain lion P14, who was a young male that had been tracked since January, was killed in Mendocino County under one of those depredation permits that we talked about a few weeks ago that's issued by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to legally kill a mountain lion because it had been preying on some sheep. So the mountain lions need all the help that they can get. They are doing better population-wise, but in particular the Southern California population has all these barriers around it that cause this genetic bottleneck that is very problematic.
So. I'm sure in the case of P14, all that is required is that a rancher says, I think a mountain lion has been eating my something, and it looks clawed up. There's no proof required.
The evidence of mountain lion depredation, it probably looks a little different from coyote depredation or some other type of attack, but it's not...
Right.
It's not... a 100% reliable science, I am sure. So, yeah. Anyway, but at least Southern California mountain lions will get a little break from getting hit by cars.
Yeah.
And also, other critters, too. Who knows? All right. We are going to skip the audio I was going to play because I would like to get to the calendar of events because we do have quite a few interesting events coming up.
All right, it's time for the calendar events. What do you got, Jeannie?
All right. I have a bittersweet announcement. Chris Hudson, who is known in the local vegan community as Dang Vegan, is headed up to Portland to work at a new Portland outpost of a well-known vegan restaurant, the Vertical Diner. But before he goes, he is hosting a whirlwind 5 all-vegan pop-up events at Tender Loving Coffee between now and the end of the month. So I'm going to shoot through them really quick. Thursday, August 22nd, tomorrow from 5 to 8 p.m., there will be barbecue soy curls, sandwiches, and a side of slaw with live music from KZFR board member Leanne Cooley. On Friday, August 23rd, from 5 to 8 p.m., will be vegan grilled burger night using the Beyond Meat burgers. Those are pretty good. Saturday, August 24th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., in support of the Chico Pride Downtown Festival, Dang Vegan will be cooking up breakfast burritos in the morning and vegan burgers and sides in the afternoon. Then on Thursday, August 29th, from 5 to 8 p.m., chicken tenders, plain buffalo and barbecue-style chicken tenders with a side of mac and cheese, also at Tender Loving Coffee with live music by Green Mountain Band. And your last chance to get Dang Vegan Chris Hudson cooking is an all-day Saturday barbecue vegan bonanza. From 10 a.m. to noon, there'll be breakfast burritos and tacos. And then from 1 to 8 p.m., grilled hot dogs, burgers, barbecue soy curls, fruit salad, mac salad, and chips. That should be amazing. For more information, go to the Tender Loving Coffee Facebook page and check out their events. The Friends of the Campfire Cats Fur is looking for volunteers for Friday, August 23rd and Sunday, August 25th to help with clearing brush and leveling an area in preparation for a new shelter building that is being delivered to help the Campfire Cats that are still remaining up on the ridge. Please contact Friends United in Rescue, Fur, at 530-413-7955 if you would like to help out. Coming up on Sunday, August 25th, is the part of the Chico Annual Pride Weekend. The exquisite Leon Bistro presents a gourmet catered lunch on Sunday, August 25th from 9 a.m. to noon at the Oak Grove Picnic Area in Lower Bidwell Park. Brunch will feature a variety of vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free options in addition to the usual fare. There will be live acoustic music in the shade of the park to close out Pride Weekend. The event is a fundraiser for Chico Pride, and for more information, go to stonewallchicopride.com. Also on August 25th, Tacos Borrego Vegan Pop-Up. Tacos, vegan, eat 'em. Blackbird Chico at 1431 Park Avenue is hosting its monthly Vegan Taco Festival from Tacos Borrego this Sunday, July 28th. The food starts at 11 a.m. and goes until the tacos sell out, which they do sell out. There will also be music, air conditioning in the bookstore, and general good cheer. For more information, call the Blackbird Cafe at 530-433-1577. And then coming up towards the end of the month, the public is invited to take a seat at the table with the Chico Climate Task Force on Tuesday, August 27th at the Card Community Center from 6 to 8 p.m. for a community-involved discussion of the upcoming update to the City of Chico's Climate Action Plan. The task force goal is to engage a broad and representative cross-section of the community in gathering priorities for inclusion in an update to the Climate Action Plan. It is important that as many voices as possible are heard and that the community fully supports and is ready to assist with implementation of the Climate Action Plan update.
If you don't think climate's important right now, the Amazon's on fire, the Arctic tundra is on fire, and 2 days ago it was 78 degrees in Chico in the middle of summer. So.
And that event will be held on Tuesday, August 27th, 2019, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Card Community Center at 545 Val Ambrosia Avenue. For more information and the meeting agenda, please check the Facebook event page, which I have shared that event to the Non-Human Radio page. All right. That is it. That is it for the calendar for now. For more information, and if you have an event to share, please send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com and check the Non-Human Radio Facebook page calendar of events for event listings. All right. As always, we have one last piece of business to close out today's show, and that is the Animal Rights Quote of the Week. Take it away, Danny.
Today's Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from an article in the July 31st issue of the New York Times Magazine on the Campfire by John Muallam. Anyway, on to the quote. We live with an unspoken assumption that the planet is generally survivable, that its tantrums are infrequent, and while menacing, can be plotted along some hazy, existentially tolerable bell curve. But the stability that American society was built around for generations appears to be eroding. That stability was always an illusion. Wherever you live with risk, just at some emotional and cognitive distance. Now those risks are ratcheting up. Nature is increasingly finding a foothold in the unimaginable.